This is North Shore Sports Night. Hello, everybody. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. Everybody's still working remotely now as we enter the, what is this, the second or third year of this pandemic?
Third year.
2022? Lord have mercy. Okay. Well, anyway, it continues, and there are concerns all over the place that are being voiced in different areas, arenas, and so on. But fortunately, I have been boosted, and I plan on it. I just saw Dr. Fauci on ABC, and he said, you may need another booster. Count me up. Count me in. Sign me up. I'll go.
Oh, yeah.
I'm all for that.
If the medical experts say you should get a fourth shot, well, then get the fourth shot, because you're not the doctor, you know?
Well, my stepdaughter is a school nurse. And she pretty much guides us, and me especially, on what to do. And if she says jump, I just say hi. So how high? And that's what I do. Anyway, Coach, sort of an open agenda here this evening as all my plans fell through. We get ready for spring sports. There's one more week of preparation for the public schools as they do their scrimmages and so on. They had some pretty good weather last week. Of course, today was ridiculous, and a lot of scrimmages have been postponed. But there's still another week to go. There's no snow to have to be removed from the fields. And so in this particular condition, Tim, I'm thinking maybe baseball and spring sports will get underway next week, a week from today.
Yeah, I've had a couple of conversations with Murray Gentile, the Glossovati head coach, and he's very excited to get going with the season. He feels he has a very, very good team. Could possibly be the best team that he's had since he's been head coach. And but again, the fields are an issue. That the fields take a beating over the course of the winter. Most schools have to wait until the city gets out and does the field preparation, and that often takes time, as they often prioritize other areas before the high school fields, and you know, not so much the grass, but the infield clay. You know, it has to be basically opened up, aerated, so it can dry out effectively. Then it has to be dragged several times, and then it has to be rolled, so it gets a hotter texture to it. It's a lot of work. You've got to even out or you know, groom it so that water doesn't pool in the second base hole, in the shortstop hole, which in Gloucester it always does. And so, you know, you have to hope that the city DPWs across the North Shore, you know, can get all the baseball fields, playable in time, because you want the kids to be able to go out there and play, but play safely. That's really important because, you know, running on poor infields or even in the outfields, can really ruin a career if you turn an ankle, you bust up an ankle, you bust up a knee, and that's just not right.
So we'll see how it turns out this week. I have not looked at the long-range forecast, but I guess there's another storm very similar to what happened last week out in the Midwest headed this way, the one with the tornadoes and so on, and I guess it's coming once again. So we'll see how it plays out, but we are headed into spring, the first full week of spring here. I do want to mention that a week ago we talked with we had a high school hockey coaches roundtable that was absolutely fascinating. Enjoyed that so much. We had the Gloucester High School coach Derek Geary. We had Winthrop's High School coach Dale Dunbar. We had Mascanomet's High School coach Andrew Jackson, and also we talked at the same time. We had John Gardner, the high school hockey coach at Linfield, and it was a great conversation. They talked so much about local sports, local high school competition this particular school year, and the one thing that they were all unanimous in talking about was promoting multi-sport athletes, or at the very least, not dedicating an entire year to one sport. If you're not going to play another sport, throw the, and Dale Dunbar said, you know, when he worked with Bobby Orr used to tell his people, his employees, put the damn skates down. We didn't say damn, but put the skates down, put the blades down, put the sticks down for at least 3 months. And, I know that, Tim, you and I, we talked for many years now, with so many coaches, and almost unanimously across the spectrum. In fact, I've not heard the opposite. I've heard every single coach we've talked with encourages their kids to do something else. It doesn't necessarily have to be an interscholastic sport, but, you know, put your main sport down for a little bit and go do something else. And we've talked about it many times. So that was pretty cool to listen to.
Yeah, but, you know, and those are the guys that that know, and, you know, for Coach Gary and Coach Dumba, you know, you look at the schools with small populations that require multi-sport athletes. And you look at the way those kids perform generally season after season, is they get a lot of great results out of their kids. They bounce back quickly from down years and get back into the win column, the competitiveness, back to the tournaments. And the kids are just overall in better shape because their muscle tone is better. Again, we've talked about this, you know, ad nauseum. You're in better shape. You have better muscle, overall muscle tone.
I think the one thing we didn't talk about, Tim.
Recover if you're playing another sport because you're using other muscles as a primary power source, but also your mind gets to debrief, download, you know, and the pressure gets off of you rather than focusing on that one sport till you absolutely burn out. And I've seen that happen to kids.
Well, that brings us to the next topic, and before I get to it, which is a perfect segue, the one thing we have not talked about, Tim, I could probably keep this brief, is that those athletes who go on and make it into the bigs, and you know, we have high school coaches who have done that. They've played at Division I level in college. They've played in the minor or major leagues. They have played three sports. And so if you're thinking as a parent that, you know, you have to channel your kid into one sport, you know, so that he or she can make Division I or the pro and or the pros, I'm thinking you might want to rethink that, because almost every single athlete we've talked to, Tim, at the big league level or the Division I level, they've all played more than one sport.
Oh, of course. And you know, once you get into college, you're generally slotted into one sport over all others, and especially at the D1 level, very rarely do you find a two-sport athlete on the D1 level anymore. You know, you think back over the last 20 years, and can you even name one, you know, that made it to the pro level that played two sports? You know, I'm thinking a lot. I can even think of is Bo Jackson, you know, mm-hmm. And I mean, he was just a freak of nature. I think Deion Sanders played baseball as well, you know, at Florida State. But it's, you know, they're the rare commodities that will be allowed to Pat Connaughton played baseball and basketball in Notre Dame. That was part of the deal, him going there, that he would be allowed to play both sports.
Yeah, and Pat Connaughton is still in touch with Mike Grenier. We'll talk a little bit about that later on, coming around at the next half hour, as we talk some Celtics basketball. And, of course, the big question is, can the Celtics continue without Rob Williams? And we'll ask Mike Grenier that. And we'll also talk some golf, a big golf agenda today with Gary Larrabee. We'll get into that. More controversy about the Salem Country Club knocking down 600 trees or more, 500 of them unauthorized. So we'll chat about that. I have a post up on our website with Steve Krause about that. Steve covered it last week. Paul Layton covering that story this week with the Salem Country Club and the Peabody Conservation Commission. But I want to segue back to the burnout thing with kids, Tim. You mentioned that very, very briefly here in our opening. And I want to direct the attention to Ashley Barty. Ashley Barty, for anybody who doesn't know, 25 years of age, from Australia, the number one women's tennis player in the world, 3 Grand Slam championships. She has 3 major championships. The only one she doesn't have is the U.S. Open at age 25, and she has retired. She's had enough.
Yeah, Yeah, and, you know, she did retire a couple of years ago, and then she came back. And now she just feels that it's the proper time. She's won Wimbledon back to back. She's got nothing to prove to herself or to peers or to anybody else anywhere. Yeah, she's made a chunk of change, and now she wants to challenge herself, she said, to try something different. Well, good for her, because she's getting out. She's in good mental shape. We've seen the effect of the pressure of not only the game but of the fans, of the press, on several other of the younger tennis players, where they're mentally breaking down. But that mental breakdown can also lead to the physical breakdown of the individual player, be it male or female, because of the pressures that are put on these players nowadays to perform. And congratulations to her. She stood up and said, "Hey, I'm done."
You know? Yeah.
And we marvel at the ability of these players to do so. We're shocked because they don't want to play anymore. How can you not want to play? How can you not want to compete? How can you not want to go out there and face the crowds and face the pressure and win the money? And that's probably why. She just doesn't want to do that anymore. She wants to find something else to challenge her.
I think it's amazing, and I know everyone I've talked with is happy for her, not knowing her. I mean, you know, she's a world-renowned athlete, and she lives in Australia. I don't know her, but I'm really happy the way this whole thing is played out, and the fact that she has done that at that level reminds me. I've told this story before, but I know a high school student who was, I believe, 15, going down, was supposed to go to Florida as a swimmer to try out for the Junior Olympics. And she was had a positive outlook about her. There was a positive vibe that she was definitely going to qualify. And she told her parents, "That's it, I'm done." And that was at age 15. So I think
part of the problem there is it's the parents. It's the parents trying to live vicariously through their son or their daughter that they never competed themselves, or they didn't get an opportunity. But boy, you know, I can push my kid in this direction, and they can achieve it. I can walk around with my chest pumped out, and I can say, "Yeah, that's my kid. You know, I did this, I did that." Well, maybe it's not the kid's total desire. They want to play and they want to enjoy it. You know, put the organized leagues away. That's one of the problems today, Rick. It's the organization goes down to the 4, 5, and 6-year-olds. They just can't go out on a pond and skate with a stick, with a puck, and have a bunch of their friends around and just loosely skate and have some fun. It's got to be organized. It's got to be, you know, you got to have people that are the coaching that have no idea what they're doing as coaches, but they're willing to put up their time, or I'll do it because I want my kid to play. And it's all for the wrong reasons that the parents are doing this. It shouldn't be for them. But the kids never get to enjoy the sports like we used to.
Well,
I grew up, we had 10 kids in that neighborhood. We played hockey in the winter. Sometimes we'd even throw in money together and we'd go rent a rink for a couple of hours and play an organized game, as much as we can consider it organized. We used to go to the ponds and play. We used to go to the ponds and just skate. We tackled a basketball backboard on a telephone pole. They took it down, we put it back up, and we would play basketball. You know, we get down to the park and we play mound in the out baseball, 5-on-5. And we got creative and we just had fun doing it. Kids today, they don't have any fun playing sports.
Well, I don't know if that's true of everybody, Tim. I think there are. I think there's a minority of which that's true, but I also think, I don't want to indict everybody, Coach, because there are a lot of really, really well-intentioned people who say, you know what, no one else is going to do it, so I'll do it. Not necessarily for my kid, although that certainly is a consideration, but no one else is doing it, so I'll do it, on the one hand. That's a social pressure problem, I think, that stems from a lot of stuff in this society. But I also think that, you know, the stuff you're talking about can't be done anymore, Coach. I'm familiar with everything you just said, but it can't be done anymore. It's just not possible.
Well, drive by a ballpark, a public park during the day. Are there any kids on the baseball diamond throwing the ball around, hitting a baseball? Barely any. Go drive by a basketball court. Are there kids? Yeah, maybe a few hanging around. But there are more kids on the skate park than there are at the basketball court. You know, the direction has changed for a lot of kids. But just the love of going out and playing hockey, playing basketball, playing baseball, just for the heck of it.
Well,
you know,
I know that in a lot of these so-called organized sports, the parent coaches do that. They let the kids, if you've got an hour's worth of ice time, all right, let's get out there and skate. Let's get out there and play and have some fun. There is a lot of that. But I lament, too, the fact that those days are gone. But they are gone. And you know what? I'm going to interject climate change here. You don't have very many ponds now you can skate on in the wintertime.
Oh, boy.
How's that for a curveball, huh?
Wow.
I'm serious. I used to do it, man. We were out there all the time. And Bobby Orr used to say, man, just throw the puck on the ice, drop your kid off, come back in 2 or 3 hours and pick him up. Let them skate. But that's gone. This is North Shore Sports Night. We are going to get to some interviews here coming up very soon for those of you who are still with us. And we will take a break in a few minutes. One more thing I want to touch on, Tim. I've got the word out to some people in the sports world, in the world of academia also, about sports ethics. And by that, what I'm trying to get information on is how coaches, kids, directors of athletics, administrators, officials, how they're dealing with what we're seeing across the spectrum, really, in terms of hazing, in terms of hate, in terms of discrimination, in terms of white supremacy statements and things like that, anti-Semitism. That is too much in the headlines, in my opinion, here on the North Shore. And I've got I've got some feelers out to see if I can get some expert advice on that, some information on that. When we see what happens in Duxbury, what has been alleged in Duxbury, what's been alleged in Danvers and other places, it's mind-boggling. I certainly know some people who are in the we know a lot of people in the coaching profession, and we're educators, and to see this go on, I don't know. This is anecdotal evidence, but it's been certainly promulgated in the last maybe since 2016 or so or 2015. And I'll leave it at that. But Tim, in your opinion, as a coach, part of the deal is your teacher. All in high school, you're a teacher. Whether you're a teacher or not, you're still a teacher. If you catch my drift, there was a time I know when I first started teaching in Gloucester that the contract said in order to be an interscholastic coach or varsity coach, you had to be a teacher. You had to be on the payroll as a teacher. Of course, those days are gone. But anybody who's out there coaching high school or coaching any other sport, you're teaching kids. And so I wonder, Tim, what's your view on this stuff now as a coach? Because, when I was coaching, I only coached a couple of years at the JV level. And the only participation I had with the kids was during practice. I was not in the locker room. I was not privy to their discussions before, on their way to school. I never saw anything on the field like some of the things we're hearing now, but it happens. And it seems that I don't think there's an epidemic of it, but it is really exacerbated at the moment. What's your opinion on this, Tim? And you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. I think it's a really touchy subject. It's a thorny subject for sure. I think it's one nowadays. In the past, coaches wouldn't talk about it, about the hazing thing, it just wasn't talked about, and it never seemed to be a problem. Today, however, it you know, the thing, everything is just seems to be over the top. But as a coach, you've got to sit down at the beginning of the season, and your first day of even tryouts, you have to have a serious talk with the kids about proper behavior, reminding them of what's acceptable and what's not acceptable in terms of behavior on the field, at practice, in the locker room, because coaches don't spend a whole lot of time in the locker room. And you trust that the kids get the message and they follow through, or there's going to be consequences, and you as the coach have the ultimate responsibility. And kids today just have a different attitude. They really do, and it's scary at times, the attitude that is projected by certain kids towards authority, towards acceptable behavior, and maybe some of the role models, quote unquote, who should be really setting the tone for these kids aren't setting the best tone. And so the kids go, well, if they do it, I can do it. If they say it, I can say it. And it has to fall, again, to the coaches to be, now more than ever, a constant reminder of propriety.
But the coaches also have to have that training. They have to know that. And, you know, I want to throw in an example here, Tim, that may be totally out of left field, which is where I played. But my dad was an Iwo Jima survivor. And he also did 3 tours in Vietnam after that. He retired from the Army with a total disability. He was wounded and so on, 100%, and at age 47. But I remember back in the 50s, Coach, okay, and that most of any kids, you know, anybody we're talking to, I don't even know what that means. But the 1950s, we were, I was 10 years old, and my dad was stationed at Fort Benning, Georgia. And I don't remember the entire circumstances, but something was going on, and I used a phrase, and he got all over me. And he said to me, don't use that phrase ever again. It's offensive to some of my guys, some of my boys. Now, my dad was probably in his early 30s at that point. He was a first sergeant, and he had a lot of 17, 18, 19-year-old guys in the outfit. And what he was referring to, I used the term cotton picking. That's a cotton picking pain in the neck or whatever. And he said, don't use that term, it's offensive. Cotton picking, okay? And I didn't understand what he was talking about because I was 10. Then I read, you know, as I got a little older, what he was talking about. And I realized at that point that he was talking about the integrity of people's backgrounds and so on. And we were using, coming from the North, we were using that term cotton picking, and we didn't even know what it meant. Didn't even know what it meant. And he educated me to that. And I look back on that, Tim, almost 100 years later, and I think, God, that was incisive. Because he had kids in his outfit who came from slave backgrounds, or at least had grandparents who were slaves. And it was like, man, I didn't know that. And here he did back in the 50s. And my dad, as I said, he was a Marine. He was, you know, the flag all the way, but in tune to what was going on with his people. And I thought, man, that's a great lesson. And it had nothing to do with political correctness. He just said, that's insensitive, that's offensive to my kids.
Yeah. that's a great story.
By the way, he made me change it to pea picking. He said, you can say pea picking because that's what Tennessee Ernie Ford says.
for those young enough to remember, you know, Tennessee Ernie Ford and his TV show and stuff. I remember my mother yelling once because I said the words "sacre bleu," and she, don't ever say that. I was like, so I don't know how long I ever said it
till now.
It's like, well, it means holy blue, doesn't it? You know, and it's not if you stretch it out, it doesn't mean that at all.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, I mean. And I don't think we see that kind of parental oversight as much anymore. But it's it's such, Rick, it's such a different world.
Oh, yeah.
Now than when we were growing up. But and again, it falls on the coaches, and you mentioned it. The coaches need to be trained. They need to get some education over what it is they need to address, how best to go about and address it, what to do when they see it appear in their programs, whether it's freshman, junior varsity, or varsity levels. Because, again, I always stress to the kids, you represent yourself, your family, the school, the community, every time you put that uniform on.
You got it.
You have to be aware that what you say and what you do reflects upon all of those things.
All right, Tim, we've got Gary Larrabee coming up here. He's warming up in the bullpen. We'll be right back. This is North Shore Sports Night on MSONewsSports.com.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
All right, we're coming back from Gary Larrabee. I've lost Tim Kearns for the moment, so I'm going to interrupt Gary in a moment here, and we'll see if we can get Tim back. But, Gary, you have quite an agenda here, so I want to get to it as soon as we can, and I'll get Tim back on here. But a lot going on in the world of golf, even 2 weeks prior to the Masters, so I can't wait to get to it. Where do you want to start, Gary? I'm going to interrupt you in about a minute.
Very good. Let's talk about what went on the PGA Tour yesterday. We obviously have a new number one player in the world. That's Scottie Scheffler, 25 years old from Texas. He won his third tour event of the year, the only player to win three tour events already this year when he won the match play yesterday in Austin, Texas. And as we discussed in the past, we have a new wave of top players. I mean, all the players who are winning this year are under 30 in most cases, and either newcomers to the winner's circle or emerging as new players to challenge the big-name players like McIlroy and Dustin Johnson and Brooks Koepka and Bryson DeChambeau, none of whom who have won a tournament yet this year.
Okay.
So we'll see what happens this week, Rick, with the one more event in Texas before we get to the Masters next week. And It's just a continuing fascination with how the PGA Tour is evolving this year.
All right. I got to get so let me take a break. I apologize for this. I'm going to put you on hold, and I'm going to call Tim, get him back, because he's going to want to talk about this. So here we go.
Hello.
All right, hold on. All right. We have Tim back. And Tim, Gary was just talking about the new number one in the world, Scottie Scheffler, and how that, again, things are all upside down. What would you say, Gary? This is his third win?
Third win this year. And, you know, some people get him confused with Xander Schauffele, but this is Scottie Scheffler. And like Scheffele, and I'm sure Tim is aware of this, they're both under 30, and we now have definitely, Tim, a new breed of challenges to all the big-time players who have been winning all the big events in recent years. And, of course, probably at the top of this list would be Colin Morikawa, who's already won two majors in, like, 2 years on the tour. And we're going to wait and see if any of these big-name guys emerge at the Masters next week, or if one of these young guys, most of these guys have been winning all the tournaments this year, step up and win at Augusta.
Yeah, Gary, I was going to ask, how do they determine, number one, does it go on a year-to-year basis and how many wins and money you've accumulated throughout the course of the season?
You shouldn't have asked me that question because I have no idea. This is a very complicated, I think, arithmetic involved in determining who's number one and how long he'll keep that ranking, but I'll believe the recognized ranking list for today, and that name's Scottie Scheffler, number one, and he should be number one. He's won three tournaments this year. I don't think anybody else has won more than one. Correct me if I'm wrong, Tim. And this guy is obviously right now at the top of his game and a definite player to watch at Augusta next week. We'll see how it evolves.
Yeah, I mean, you know, these are the first three tournaments that he's ever won. And is that enough to shoot him all the way up to the number one player in the world?
It is, because last year I think he was in contention for two, if not three, of the four majors. And you do gain respect in those rankings when you have a high finish in one of the four majors. Granted, none of these three wins this year were a major, but the fact remains no one has done what he has done this year. Win three times in less than 3 months, and let's see if he can keep it up.
Yeah, that's going to be the interesting thing. These are don't want to call them lower level tournaments, but certainly they certainly weren't the pressure cookers that are going to be coming up over the next several months. So how, you know, will he hold up in these particular tournaments? The yesterday's final day was quite impressive. He wins 3-1 and 4-3 to close out the tournament. That was mighty impressive.
It was, and of course it says here that he went the final 57 holes at Austin Country Club without trailing, so he always was in command or right there all square. But I will take except with one thing you said, Tim, that he wasn't in the pressure cooker of a major. Well, when you're playing for more than $1 million first place,
yeah,
you're in a pressure cooker. They don't care what the name of the tournament is. When they're playing for that much money, and then the next three-putt could cost them $500,000 or $1 million with all the money that they're paying out these days, he's in a pressure cooker. So I'm very impressed. He wins Phoenix. He wins Bay Hill. And now he wins Austin. Let's see if he can win a major this year.
Mm-hmm.
Well, again, and I agree with you, Gary, that is this a continuation of the trend of young guns coming up and playing outstanding golf in the face of the legends, you know, that have been over the past 20 years, that the guard is beginning to change?
No question. I mean, the 30-year-olds are having a difficult time winning a tournament. The 20-year-olds are winning virtually all of them. I mean, Dustin Johnson hasn't won this year. Bryson DeChambeau hasn't won this year. Nor has McIlroy or Koepka. I don't think has Justin Thomas won this year? He's in his 20s, so he wouldn't count anyways. He's in that new breed.
Yeah, it's crazy.
He's in that new breed, and we have another member of the new breed, Tim, who just won yesterday in the LPGA tournament in the Carlsbad, California. And I can't pronounce her name.
Yeah.
But Titico.
Yeah. Yes, Ataya Titico.
Titico.
Anyways, good for the LPGA. The international flavor of the LPGA Tour continues, and good for them. The last thing we should talk about...
Gary, hold on 1 second. By the way, she goes by Jean, according to her website, so so we don't have to worry about all that other stuff.
Well done, Rick, well done. And the last thing we should talk about, though, is a big, big breaking news from last week, the fact that Phil Mickelson has been disinvited, really, from what several reports have indicated, disinvited from playing in the Masters in the next week, which is unprecedented. But I think, as you know, loose lips sink ships. In this case, loose lips may have sunk Phil Mickelson's competitive career.
Yeah, I did a quick look at that, and it seems the repercussions of his ill-fated backing of the new Saudi golf tour is really going to cost him a whole lot of money.
And a lot of respect, a lot of recognition. I think along the same lines, I was told by an impeccable source this afternoon, doing my coast-to-coast checking on impeccable sources before we come on the air tonight, that he will not be defending his PGA championship at Southern Hills, which I believe is in May again this year, as it was last year. Right, Tim?
I do believe you are correct, Gary, as you are.
And that's going to be the first time a major champion has not defended his title, barring injury, in God knows how many years.
Yeah, it's too bad. Earlier on in his career, I as good as he played, there just always seemed to be something that, I didn't really care for him. It was like, there's something about him. And then he goes, and he sort of flips all that attitude by people and becomes adored by people. And then he goes and he does this, and he said he was only doing it for the golfers, for the good of the game, and that didn't turn out to be so good.
No, because Phil have to live with that. We'll see if he plays in any of the majors this year, or if he plays in a tour event later this year. Just a sad story in so many respects. Along the same lines, Guy, we should mention that there's also been several media reports about the John skepticism about this LIV 8 tournament event that Greg Norman's putting on this year with huge money backed from Saudi Arabia. There's supposed to be one of these tournaments at International out in Bolton, Mass. Labor Day weekend, we mentioned it last week, and we'll see if any of these events get played. I don't know if any of this, there seems to be a lot of things that are falling through the gaps, if you will, in making this 8 tournament event happen. Anyways, moving right along, the one big local story, because this week continued today when the Peabody Conservation Commission toured the parts of the Salem Country Club property where the club has been accused of improperly cutting down several hundred trees as part of their course restoration project last fall. And it certainly, it even got some space on Channel 5 tonight at 6, which is quite unexpected. But the fact remains, it seems that it's apparent that Salem Country Club and the Peabody Conservation Commission were not on the same page when the club informed the commission that they would be doing this restoration work and cutting down trees last fall. It seems right now the onus has fallen on Salem Country Club, and that they did not have the proper documentation confirmed by the Conservation Commission to have all of this work done, where there might be affected some trees that are on club property but are actually under the jurisdiction of the Conservation Commission, because they may be touching on or adjacent to marshlands, wetlands, whatnot. But I read the quotes in the paper today, guys, and last week about this Conservation Commission, and they're sure having a great time making a big stink about very little. We're talking trees that were cut down. The big issue, which I think is going to emerge later as we get the golf course open, and there's more people checking out what happened with this restoration project. that they may have cut down too many trees for the betterment of the golf course, never mind if it's for the benefit and the pleasure of the Conservation Commission. But we'll see how all this breaks down after we see what comes out in the media in the next few days from the Conservation Commission regards what possible sanctions or what possible legal action that the city may take on Salem Country Club.
Well, that's an ongoing story that I can't wait to get your take on again as it continues. But the last item on your agenda, Gary, I have to ask you, you're going to talk about your brother, and then I have to ask you how you guys got involved in golf in the first place.
Well, we were a very sports-minded family, and my brother was, my two brothers, the older one and the younger one, both were much more athletically talented than I was, and Mark's the real golfer in the family, and he's always loved the game, and captain of the high school golf team at both Damas High and Springfield College. He decided to give it a shot. He got a chance to work while he was in college for Cotton Dunn at Kernwood Country Club, and he liked what the business was like, and here we are 16 years later at Eastman Golf Links. This season may very well be his last, and of course he just turned 66 tomorrow. He's been in the business, I think, for 35 years, and he's been a wonderful face of PGA golf for all of us, and we're very proud of him.
Gary, let's see. How did he fall or rise to be the 129th best golfer in the Larrabee family?
That's me, I think. That's not him. He's had his moments. There was a good natural player, and he's had some high points, and he won a New England PGA Pro Press Championship with me, and mostly done taken care of by him. One last thing, guys, I want to mention, that I saw in the internet just the other day, that Steve Stricker, as you know, who was the captain of the victorious Ryder Cup team last fall, Tim, he suffered a very serious scare last fall after the Ryder Cup, maybe a month or two later, with a very serious heart condition that almost killed him.
Oof.
He's in a very slow recovery period, but I didn't even know about this until the other day. We're so pleased to hear that Steve Stricker is going to be fine. We'll hopefully see him back out on the tour, most likely the Champions Tour, sometime later this year.
Wow, you're right. You know, that was kept, I don't want to say under wraps, but certainly below the radar for most people, and certainly wish him a speedy recovery.
Yeah, I missed all of it, but, you know, it's a great story. He's from Wisconsin. His wife caddies for him, and even though I do still hold it against him for not playing in the 2017 U.S. Senior Open at Salem, he kind of claimed fatigue because he was playing several tournaments and he was going to be hosting the tournament after Salem the following week in Milwaukee. And well, he didn't make it, but he's been another great game for golf in all respects. And, hope to see him back out there competing sometime this year.
Gary, you're great for us. Thank you so much. Hope to see you next week, too. Please stay well and keep this stuff coming.
I promise to do so. Thanks, guys, and stay well.
Thank you, Gary. Take care. All right, that's Gary Larrabee, sports writer, golf historian. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. Need to take a break. We'll come back and talk some hoops, and boy, is it going to happen? What's going to happen with the Celtics? We'll check in with Mike Grenier in just a second. Again, this is North Shore Sports Night, and we'll be right back.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Yeah. All right, 3-2-1, we're back. That's Mike Grenier, another sports writer here on MSO News Sports, mostly with the Salem News, but in other things as well. And Tim Kearns is here. And Mike, I'm going to start right now with the elephant in the room. Can the Celtics win without Robert Williams?
Well, that's a great question, Rick. I mean, that's what we're going to find out in the next several weeks here. First of all, I think we need to find out what the timeline is going to be for his injury. Torn meniscus, he's having surgery. He's not going to try to play through it, obviously. And it's funny, I was looking up something today. There's a kid who plays for the Cleveland Cavaliers, Dean Wade, comes off the bench. He's kind of in their regular rotation. And he suffered a torn meniscus a couple weeks ago. And he tried to ride it out. And now the Cleveland Cavaliers announced today that he's going to have surgery and is out for the season. So, similar injury, out for the season. So you wonder if Robert Williams is, you know, whether the timetable is even worth mentioning, because here's a guy in the NBA, same age, 6'9", and he's out for the year. So, I don't know. I think, obviously, the medical community would have to answer that. There must be different degrees of torn meniscus and how you handle it and how you come back from surgery on that. But obviously he's going to be out for several weeks. It's going to cut into their playoff drive, how long he's going to be out, and then how long does it take him to maybe, you know, readjust and come back to what he was. Because obviously, and we've talked about the importance of Robert Williams, right, guys, and how phenomenal a year he's had and how much he's improved. Really will be a contender for a comeback player of the year because he's played in 61 games this year. 10 points and basically 10 rebounds per game. We've talked about his intangibles, the way the spirit he brings to the Celtics on the floor, the way he dives for loose balls, the way he can guard small forwards and guards out on the perimeter. So this is a massive blow to the Celtics. So I throw that out there, Tim. What do you think? I think, obviously, if they can get by without him first round of the playoffs, maybe you start to get a little hopeful that he'll be back for the later rounds of the playoffs.
Yeah, having suffered a torn meniscus back in somewhere in the dark ages, I think it was.
And I
got into the surgeon. I basically ripped it completely in half, and couldn't run on it.
Right.
You know, every time I took a step, I got a click.
Yep.
And it's uncomfortable, and I think it's a great thing that he's just they're shutting it down. They're going to do the surgery.
Right.
He can get back to rehab. This is when I was working for UPS, and I was out for several weeks and doing the rehab because there's a lot more physicality involved with running up and down the court and leaping like he does. So he's going to have to make sure that, you know, he has strength in that area of around the knee really, really well, because he'll be wearing a brace from now on anyways as a precaution.
Right.
But again, you know, what does their schedule look like coming up over the remaining few games? Can they mix and match at the center position using these and whoever else.
Well, you know, it's going to come down to this, Tim. Horford, obviously, now, tonight, they're playing in Toronto right now, and they don't have Tatum, they don't have Horford, they don't have Jaylen Brown. How do you win that game? I mean, Aaron Nesmith is playing. He starts tonight, okay? And right now, they're up 16-7. Oh, so, you know, they're still going crazy. However, obviously, I expect it to take its toll tonight, especially without Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, let alone Robert Williams. And their remaining schedule, Tim, is actually pretty tough. They have a couple of, on paper, easy-looking games against the Indiana Pacers and one other sub-500 team. But at the end of next week, they close out the regular season at the Chicago Bulls, and the very next night at the Milwaukee Bucks, and then they have a couple days off, and they go to the Memphis Grizzlies, who only have the second-best record in the NBA. So I kind of think they might have to realize that they may not finish first or even second, because basically the first four teams in the Eastern Conference are tied for
mm-hmm.
place right
yeah.
now. So I think they're going to have to sacrifice first place, because I think the schedule is definitely too tough for them to finish first. So, but they will still have a home court, even if they finish third or fourth. They'll have home court for the first round of the playoffs and perhaps the second round, depending on how the rest of the teams play out. So you start with that. It's going to be a positive there at home. But obviously, they're going to be missing Robert Williams. And who's going to take his place? Well, Horford's probably going to have to play a bit of the five position, the center position. And have you ever heard of Luke Cornett? He's the guy that's like the backup to the backup. You know, he's like 6'11", has not really shown much in the NBA. He's only 26 years old. He can capable of hitting the three-point shot, but he's very inexperienced, and he's just, you know, hasn't faced a tough competition in his short NBA career.
This is the old-timer talking here, old-time Celtics and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But I want... There's a couple of things here to peel. Number one is their last 30 games has been an absolutely historic run.
I agree.
I've not, even going back to the glory days with Russell and those guys, I've never seen a stretch where you get 20 or 30 games where the Celtics destroyed everybody.
Right, even the good teams, Rick, like you said. Yeah,
yes,
they've been winning games by, last night, 20, up 25 at the half.
Yeah, and then beyond that, the style of play that they have, Mike, I know that Robert Williams is, in my opinion, a very unique talent. He changes the arc of the shot whenever he goes at anybody. He's a spark on defense. He is getting really better and better on offense. But I look at the Celtics' rotation. I look at their overall team defense, and that gives me hope that they can compete in the playoffs even without Williams.
Right. I think, though, Rick, I think one of the big factors in the playoffs is the defense gets to be so intense and the physical play is so intense. And you want a guy of Robert Williams' height. I mean, he's got unreal jumping ability. So even though he's not a seven-footer, he makes up for it with his fantastic athleticism and jumping ability. Daniel Tice does not have that height or that jumping ability. He could be a very adequate guy in the middle. Because he plays smart, he's been through Brad Stevens' system. He was around for 4 years and was a really good, reliable role player, and that's I'm sure the help the Celtics were hoping for in the postseason. Now he's thrust into the position of being a starter, and he tends to get in foul trouble, and that's going to be a problem if he plays a lot of minutes, which he necessarily will have to play a lot of minutes in the postseason.
Mm-hmm.
He tends to be in foul trouble, so he's going to have to watch out how he plays to stay in the game, and then. Behind him, what have you got? You really don't have. You have Luke Cornett, an inexperienced guy, or you move Al Horford into that position. Obviously, guys like Grant Williams, who's had a great season overall coming off the bench, and Derek White are really going to have to step up, and Peyton Pritchard, who's been playing tremendous lately. Those three guys will be relied on more than ever in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just missing a big person, though, and I think that's a huge factor in the playoffs. When inevitably you're going to clash with Giannis from the Milwaukee Bucks, probably, and or Joel Embiid or the Philadelphia 76ers, and those are two monster big men that they're going to have to try to cope with. I just see that as a disadvantage without a Robert Williams.
Absolutely.
Now, I do have a suggestion. I've reached out to the Celtics today, and maybe to get as an enforcer, they can get Will Smith.
We didn't talk about him at the top, but I wish we had.
You know, I wonder, though, actually, if Chris Rock would be better, because he took the blow and came back, whereas Will Smith just took a cowardly way and just hit the guy in the face.
Rock,
I mean,
Rock,
that's ridiculous.
Yeah, Rock didn't even respond. I mean, he
yeah.
took it, yeah.
Yeah.
What impressed me, he didn't fall down. I mean, it looked like a pretty good swing.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, he backed up a little bit, but...
You know, but getting back to the Celtics, Rick, and the points you made last night, as they were leading by 25 and 27, and Tim, you can get your take on this. I was thinking the only thing that can derail this team is an injury to
yep.
a key player.
I thought the same thing. Yep.
Right? Right? And all of a sudden, Robert Williams was out of the game, and then all of a sudden the news came on during the second half. They scrolled it that Robert Williams is out with a knee injury and will not return tonight, meaning last night. But at the time, you're thinking, okay, it might have just tweaked it because he's had tendonitis, okay, and he'll miss a game. But he's played 61 games this year of their 64 or 65 now. So he's actually been pretty darn durable this season. But obviously last night what looked initially like, okay, maybe he's just going to be out for a game or two became a much bigger issue later in the evening. And, of course, today when he was reexamined and they determined that he should, you know, he said he's going to have surgery. He's going to have it done right away. And I agree, Tim. Why not have it done right away if there's any kind of chance that he can come back during the playoffs?
Yeah. You just hope the playoffs go long enough that he can come in and make a measurable difference. Because,
right.
I, again, it's it's tough, you know. The way that he plays, the way that he bangs, it just puts so much pressure on that knee. You know, Willis Reed came out of the dressing room with a bandage on his knee and
right.
helped the Knicks beat the Lakers.
Yeah.
So
yep.
Can he do something like that? Well, probably not. You know, those guys are one of the million. But can he come back and make a difference and make a serviceable contribution?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I agree. And the funny thing is, Rick and Tim, as we saw last night with the way they've been playing and the way Rick mentioned for the last, basically since January 5th, I think they're like 29-7, okay? So, and they've won like 24 of their last 27, I think it is, or 24 of their last 28. And it was starting to be a storybook season here because they got off to the terrible start. They were in 11th place at Eastern Conference at one point. Now they're in first place or tied for first. What a storybook season this would be coming, especially with Jaylen Brown continuing to get better and Jason Tatum playing off the charts in the second half of the season and really elevating himself into the MVP conversation. I don't care about these individual awards, but just the fact that he's mentioned with guys like Embiid and players like that, it just shows you, to me, how much he was coming along this season, regardless of whether he ranks third or fourth or fifth in the MVP contention. Who cares? But the point is, he's been improving all season. He's had a phenomenal season overall. And I think somewhere, Rick, the light came on that he stopped playing that isolation basketball and taking up 17 or 18 seconds off the 24-second clock, and he became much more team-involved on both ends of the court, and also, at least on the offensive side of the ball, taking the ball to the basket, drawing fouls, getting to the free throw line, becoming a much better passer over the last two or three months. It shows you that he can really be an intelligent player. And Jaylen Brown, to a certain degree, has done the same thing.
I think one thing I hope is that Coach Udoka is responsible. He got through to these guys, I think that's the case. The other thing I hope is that Jason Tatum, and to a lesser extent Jaylen Brown, is getting to enjoy his overall talent in the complete game of basketball, not
right.
just one-on-one, but what his skills, what his talent allows him to do the entire length of the floor.
Right, and I agree, Rick, but I think with Tatum right now, he's so locked in and focused on winning, more so than I've ever seen
Amen.
In his career.
Yep.
He's more focused on winning than anything else, and I think probably he's going to try to do more than ever to try to make them a real threat in the playoffs. Now, whether that becomes a viable thing with this injury to Robert Williams, time will tell. We'll see. Again, it's going to depend on first-round matchups, who they play in the first round. They'll have home court. It could be a Toronto, the team they're playing tonight, or it could be, we hope it's not Brooklyn. Although Brooklyn, you know, despite the fact they have Kyrie back and playing at home, they haven't been all that good. They just have not been all that good. And if they have to go to Toronto for a one-game play-in, Kyrie isn't eligible to play in Toronto, Canada.
Hmm.
So they might not even be a factor. So you're looking at the teams that have been powerhouses all year, like Philly, like Milwaukee, and the Chicago Bulls, who they've had their own injury issues. They haven't been as good with Lonzo Ball being out for the bulk of the season. They just haven't been as good in the second half of the year. So the two teams you really have to worry about are Milwaukee and Philly, I think, as far as the powerhouse teams in the Eastern Conference.
You know, I'm still holding to the theory, Mike, but it was you and I in our conversation about it started to improve, and when they took our advice, that's when it started to steamroll. That's when they went on this big run, and I'm not giving up on that, but it has been the team concept
yep.
that every player has bought into, especially Tatum, that has changed the dynamic of the team. Now you just can't focus on one of them. You've got to play five-man defense, because if you fall asleep focusing on one, somebody is sneaking in for the backdoor layup, which was traditional of the old Celtics. You know, running the weave, that weave was run for a purpose, to break somebody off underneath for an easy two. And that's what they're getting, and they're getting the reaction to that kind of success by opening up shorter range jump shots. And it's even a much more relaxed three when you take it. And because we talked about that last week.
Yep, that's right. That's right. You're right on all counts, Steve. And Rick, you'll love this because you love the guy. But I would also contend that Marcus Smart is having the best year of his career.
I love him, yeah, yeah.
I mean, I think he's making better decisions on the court, with and without the ball. He's passing extremely well, and he's passing over the bad-looking three-point shot.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, he's dishing off to just about anybody else that looks open for a three-point shot. And he'll take it when he feels really comfortable with it, but he's making, I think, for the most part, really good decisions about dumping the ball off to another three-point shooter. Peyton Pritchard, who's on the floor right now, has been another major factor in these last few weeks for the Celtics, and he'll have to continue to be in the playoffs because for a guy who was buried on the bench early in the season, now he's playing a lot, and he's playing extremely effectively.
Well, Coach Udoka listened to you about him. The thing about Smart I like, too, also, is that his teammates trust him with the three-pointer now. They'll go
right,
to him.
Right. And, you know, obviously he's making his own case for Defensive Player of the Year. And, you know, with the support of, like, guys like Jaylen Brown and Tatum. And, you know, really, when you think about it, he is one of the best defensive players in the NBA, so why shouldn't he be in the conversation, even if he's the one pushing that conversation?
Final question for me, Mike, and then I'll let Tim wrap it up for us. Observations from around the league, either with local participants or just in general?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think we have to look at, well, as far as local, I mean, obviously, I've been in touch with Scoonie Penn, who's an assistant with the Memphis Grizzlies, and he's not surprised that his team has the second best record in the NBA, behind Phoenix, which is 61-14. And Rick, that's old school, right? Phoenix has a similar record to what those great Celtics.
Ridiculous, yes.
Yeah. You know, when the Celtics went 68-14 in that 1986 team.
Or 40-1 at home.
Right, and no one's going to match that. But they have a similar record and a similar approach to the playoffs right now. They feel that they weren't quite there. Obviously, they got beat by Milwaukee last year, so obviously they're a tremendous threat to win it all. And, of course, Milwaukee, Pat Connaughton is back. He scored 52 points in the first four games of his return, averaging 13 a game and shooting almost 50%. So
nice.
They're in good shape now that he's back. So I think the Eastern Conference is going to be a really dogfight, and I would give the Celtics a chance against anybody with a healthy Robert Williams. I think they could beat the Phillies and the Milwaukee because of the improvements they have made, like both of us, or like all three of us have pointed out, with that mental change where, okay, if we're going to win, we got to play team ball. And that everybody bought in. Marcus Smart, Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Robert Williams, all those guys. Grant Williams has had a great season off the bench. So I would give them certainly an even shot at beating even the best teams in the Eastern Conference. But obviously right now, at least for the time being, they're not as good a team without Robert Williams, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Stay within the current execution, even without Williams. Don't panic.
Right.
Maintain the style of play you have that has gotten you to this point in the season with this most recent success. No, you can still do that. Believe you can still do that. Believe in the guys that are going to come in. The guys that come in have got to have that belief that they can do that and that they don't have to totally be Robert Williams, but they're going to have to collectively make contributions that make up for him.
I agree. It's going to be difficult to do, Tim, but it's been done in the past by other teams, and let's see if they can carry this momentum that they've built in the last half of the season here into the playoffs without Robert Williams. It's a really interesting team to watch right now, and I think the fans have bought in just as much as the players in terms of support. I think the fans will be behind them even more now that Robert Williams is out because they have made such a great surge with Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum leading the way.
Hey, listen.
I don't understand the team that they can beat. And this is what the fans have been looking for. There's this kind of resurgence. Almost, not, can't compare it, But back to the Bird, McHale, Perry, DJ era when they played lights out defense. When they played fast break when they needed it. When they played half court when they needed it. There was no one dominant scorer. They could all score 30 points a game if they wanted to, but they played within the flow of the offense, and Larry would get 20. Kevin might get 15. Robert might get 16. You know, and that was enough to get them the W. Be concerned with getting the W and not getting stats.
I agree. I mean, they're going to have to play even more as a team right now without Robert Williams. And I know, Rick, you want to wrap this up. That's my last comment.
Yeah, we just, you know, the time thing. It's great, Mike. As always, I'm so enthused when we do this. It's so much fun. I learn a lot from you every single week. So we'll do it again next week.
That sounds great, Rick. You know, and I can tell you right now, the Celtics are beating the Toronto Raptors, even with this backups plan.
Hey, by the way, was Tatum and Brown a coach's decision?
They were both listed last night as being questionable for this trip because of minor knee problems. Just, I think they both have been played heavy minutes lately.
Yeah.
And I just think it's kind of a rest game for them.
I hope so. Okay.
I'd rather he rest them one at a time.
Right.
All right, Mike, we'll see you next Monday.
Take care. All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Mike. That's Mike Grenier, a sports writer, joining us here pretty much weekly now as a Celtics expert. Tim, any final thoughts?
No, I'm just following Connecticut. They're up, I think it's 8 at the half against North Carolina.
Okay. And this
Connecticut women.
This time next week, we'll be getting ready for the Red Sox opener at Yankee Stadium.
Yep, here we go again.
All right. Thank you, Tim. Talk to you later.
All right, Rick.
Be well. Thanks, Coach.
Yep.
All right, that is Tim Kearns, our MSO Super Analyst and Ambassador of Goodwill. I'm Rick Moore, producer and engineer Bill Proposky. Oh, by the way, don't forget Sports Writers Podcast tomorrow, hosted by Bill Newell. It'll drop around 8 a.m. This week, the Sports Writers, despite the cold weather, share some early thoughts on the spring high school season. And they'll be talking about baseball, softball, lacrosse, and St. John's Prep. Uh-oh. St. John's Prep wrestling records a national achievement. And the writers will discuss the increasing trend of high school athletes who transfer schools. So again, Phil Stacy, the executive sports director of the Salem News, Matt Williams, assistant sports director, sports editor, I should say, Nick Giannino, sports writer for the Salem News, along with Nick Kukuru, the Gloucester Times sports editor, and of course our host, our own Bill Newell. Tomorrow, right here on MSO News Sports. We'll see you next week. On behalf of everybody, thank you very much for joining us. Be well. This is MSONewsSports.com.